Thank you for listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. If you're looking for a better pre-owned buying experience, Lakewood Chev has certified pre-owned vehicles that are fully inspected, warranted by General Motors, and have a 30-day exchange privilege. It's Lakewood Chev. Let's get to the Rashawn Report, brought to you by Auto City Edmonton, St. Albert Trail, and 131st Avenue. If you're looking for a previously owned vehicle, best place to go is Auto City Edmonton. Cars, trucks, vans, SUVs, you name it, they have over 750 to choose from at Auto City Edmonton. Ryan Rashog, TSN, joins us now. Shogger, it is official now. Maj asked the question, so I'm going to ask you to start.
Okay.
What was the low point, only one, during the Decade of Darkness?
Oh, my goodness. Low point. Oh, man, I need to think about that for a couple of minutes. What did he say?
Oh, we had different ones. For me, the low point was the Nikita signing, because it just put a stamp on the fact the team had no clue how to evaluate defense.
Yeah.
And it had been going on for a while, and that was kind of the clincher. Not only did they overpay him, they traded to get his rights.
Yeah. You know what? That was pretty darn ugly, wasn't it? Just in terms of just seeming like they were kind of floundering around looking desperate for some sort of answer. That's a good one. I'd have a tough time arguing with that one. Yeah.
There's a lot of Dallas Eakins hiring references.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The amount of money it cost them, I'm going to have a hard time thinking of a better one than that. What did Maj say?
I think Maj had the low two-tier fans comment.
Yeah, that was actually, you know what? That was a pretty tough one, too. That press conference where Kevin was kind of under fire and things were getting pretty pretty tough there. I think that was probably pretty high up there. How about
we got a lot of people when
I don't know, Seattle, the whole Seattle.
That was embarrassing. Yeah,
that felt pretty low.
A lot of fans didn't like the jersey tossing on the ice, and that's more from a fan thing.
Oh,
that's not the organization. So I could see maybe, and I agree, I didn't like it, but I understood frustration. I just didn't think that was the way to go about it.
How about this one? Pronger demanding a trade.
That might have started
long after the high point, but it was between. It's in the timeline you specified.
Oh no, it's definitely in the Decade of Darkness. A lot of people think that was definitely the starting point. The McDavid lottery win was the starting point to see it turn around. Now, it still took almost 2 years, right? That's the thing. April 15th was when they won the lottery and in 2015, and they still didn't make the playoffs until March 28th, 2017.
Yeah, two seasons. But, I mean, even with Crosby, right? I mean, the Penguins didn't make the playoffs the first year they had Sidney Crosby. They were on the outside looking in. So I don't think that's unusual. I think a franchise player can make a huge difference, but he doesn't necessarily turn a non-playoff team into a playoff team immediately on his own. There's only so much that he can do. Although, it's not on his own, but Austin Matthews has done a nice job of turning that Maple Leafs franchise around in pretty short order. But he's getting some help from some pretty talented young guys too. So, yeah, it's been an interesting run, and Oilers fans have long suffered. And I was impressed. I thought they were great in the building last night when the Oilers were... Their play was dipping a little bit. The fans came up with a chant for them, a Let's Go Oilers chant. Fans here know how to do this. They've just been in a slumber for a while.
Well, that's a valid point, and I sense it will get louder. The Oilers now, They got the playoff clinch. You could see a lot of relieved faces, none more than Nugent Hopkins and Eberle, no doubt, and rightfully so. They've been through the pain the longest, excluding the fans, of course, but now they got to refocus. San Jose tomorrow, Anaheim on Saturday. If you had to pick right now, be just between the Sharks and the Ducks, when you look at the teams and their overall depth and everything, which one do you think Edmonton would have a better chance against in the opening round of the playoffs?
I want to say San Jose because I don't think they're playing as well as Anaheim's playing right now. So it's a little bit of a timing standpoint. There's something about the way they match up against the Ducks that I don't love. I don't love how Kessler tends to be able to do a pretty decent job playing toe-to-toe against McDavid, And that leaves you Getzlaff versus Nugent Hopkins. And I just don't think that that's a great 1-2 matchup for the Oilers. So, you know, for that reason, I don't know that Anaheim's a great look for them. I guess I'm saying San Jose, although it's kind of hard to say that because they went to the Stanley Cup final last year. They've got great high-end players and can beat anybody on any night. So, but I do think that Anaheim is not a great matchup for the Oilers, which it's funny. I mean, they've done well against the Ducks this season.
Yeah, well, they're 2-2 right now, though the Oilers did win one in overtime. The thing that's perplexing to me, I think San Jose's top four defense is better than Anaheim's. And that concerns me in a playoff series. Whereas Anaheim, you know, they've got more experience up front. And you're right, the Kessler-Getzlaff top two line matchup. Thornton's older, Marlowe's older. I know they have a ton of experience. To me, the one difference where I might lean, I still think Anaheim has some question marks in goal. And I know Bernier's been hot down the stretch. I'm still not sold on him. And Gibson's been injured and a little bit of a head case at times. That's the one position that I think is so crucial in the postseason where, we've seen good teams lose series with bad goaltending. And that's why I still might lean a little bit towards Anaheim because of the question marks in goal right now.
Yeah, for sure. And the Sharks, you know, the Sharks have a reliable goaltender who I think wants to hit this stage and really prove something. And so I think that I agree with you on that front. Burns makes it interesting too, because I mean, what does he want to be on any given night? There's some nights where he can just be so dominant offensively, but he can also, when he wants to lock it down as a defensive defenseman, he's a tough guy to play against. And he can play against anybody because he can skate with Mo. I mean, it's just got great wheels on him for a bigger guy. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good point. Braun, Vlasic, Martin, and Burns are basically what we're talking about for San Jose's top four, right?
Yeah.
Burns, Martin, Vlasic, Braun. And those guys, I mean, like just Vlasic is such a good player in his own right and doesn't get talked about a whole bunch. And Justin Braun has come into his own in the last few seasons. So, yeah, I hear what you're saying, but at the end of it, Nugent Hopkins they're going to need, if they end up playing Anaheim, it's going to be tough. Like, they're going to need production from more than one line because Kessler generally does a pretty good job on McDavid, and they're going to need more than one line that can chip in.
Oh, 100%.
All the matchups that are potential, I think Kessler is the best player to play against McDavid. I think he's done the best job against McDavid.
Yep.
And so that's where the next lines come into play, where they'll be needed. I don't know that they'll be needed more than they would if Kessler's toe-to-toe with McDavid.
Which is why I think the orders the next two games are huge. Because if you win both of them, then you got a realistic shot to finish first. And if you finish first, then you might have a chance to take on the Calgary Flames. And I don't see a matchup on the Flames that concerns me definitely as much as Kessler. Like, Backlund's line's good. I just don't see him in the same boat as Kessler one-on-one. And to me, the Flames' top four isn't as good as the Sharks' top four.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Monahan, Backlund, Stage, and Bennett through the middle. When you're facing the Calgary Flames, I think the Oilers match up way better against that group of centers. Calgary's got some youth up front, some guys that haven't been in this situation before. So I think Calgary is the best matchup for Edmonton. I think that's who they match up the best against. They've had a lot of success against them, although they're playing better in this part of the season than they were back when the Oilers faced them early on. But I do think it's the best matchup. It's frankly, just from the standpoint of a series to cover and a spectacle to see, a Battle of Alberta would be really, really interesting to cover and to watch. So that's kind of what I'd like to see, but we'll have to hang on and see how she pans out.
Ryan Oshog from TSN joins us. I know, Shocker, we had the three questions today up at tsn.ca. The interesting one for people, I recommend go watching it. But the one that interested me was the Nugent Hopkins Eberle kind of expectations of those two. They've been here the longest. Obviously neither has been in the in the postseason, you know, but they're not rookies anymore. You know, you're seventh and sixth year respectively in the NHL. You're veterans now. You know, you played 501 and 389 games respectively. What do you look at their games? What's your expectations from those two? And do you think one is better suited for the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is probably a little bit better suited to be able to elevate with the pace of playoff hockey. I think that his game, I mean, there's lots of speed in his game. It's not an issue at all. And I think the playoffs while it gets tighter checking, I think it gets faster more often. And to me, Eberle's skating is not a strong spot for him. And at times his effectiveness has waned a little bit here and there, because I feel like the overall speed hasn't been there. So if it ramps up a little bit, I think Nugent-Hopkins is better equipped to handle playoff hockey than Eberle is. But to your point, there's the way that Nugent-Hopkins will be relied on and the way that they need him to elevate is different as a center iceman. And he hasn't shown in a number of different ways that he can necessarily elevate in the way you want him to in the playoffs. And the faceoff circle is the best example of that.
What did you think of calling a timeout with the faceoff in the neutral zone with 1.2 seconds remaining?
Yeah, it was a little odd. I guess Todd McClellan just didn't want to leave anything to chance, wanted to make sure he had a message. See, he didn't hold his players there for 30 seconds.
No,
called them over, said what he had to say, and then let them go. So I don't think it was even a full 30-second time. I don't know if it was or, like, if they took the whole time or not. I think he was just wanting to make sure, you know, and for whatever reason felt like he needed to haul him over. I didn't think it was poor sportsmanship. I didn't think he was being silly about it. I just think he had a message and needed to make sure it got delivered. Did you have an issue with it?
No, I didn't have much of an issue. We had a lot of people wondering if LA would be upset about it, and boo-hoo, I guess. But I actually thought he called it not because he was worried about his team giving up a goal. I think it was more so a chance for the fans to soak it in. That's honestly what I regretted not asking him about it after the game. But I wondered if it was just like, here you guys go, enjoy this moment. It's been a long time.
Yeah, see, and I think, no, I'm just speculating. I think Todd would view that reasoning as disrespectful to the Ducks, or to the Kings, sorry. I think if you were to do that to make them sit there in that moment and let the fans cheer him on, that he would view that as being disrespectful to the opponent.
Yeah.
I think there was a tactical reason why he did it. Otherwise, I don't think he would. Because I don't think he would believe that would be okay for the Kings. Then they might have reason to be upset. I think he probably just realized he needed to get a message to a player or two or just a quick strategic note and saw things were happening and called the timeout. You know, I think it was sort of a spur-of-the-moment thing. Seemed like a little bit overkill, but whatever.
Quickly, looking ahead for the Oilers, do you think McClellan has to worry about resting anybody other than Cam Talbot, which I don't think he'll rest anymore, but do you think there's somebody in the final weekend that's going to get a rest potentially?
Well, I mean, I think Matt Hendricks is at a point in his career where he's most effective when he doesn't get played every single night. So I think that we could see them back off of Matt Hendricks' games for the next little bit here. He hasn't been an everyday guy. I think he should have been in the lineup for the game last night. I thought Slepyshev struggled, but that was a game to me that they could have used Matt Hendricks. So I would expect him to get in against the San Jose Sharks, but I don't think he needs to play every night. I think they would love to have him fresh for the playoffs. I think they'll most likely start game one of the playoffs with him in the lineup. That's my sense of it at this moment, but they might not play him in every game between here and there, just with an eye on keeping him rested and keeping him effective. And, I was chatting with Drew Romena today, and he was noting that, Hendricks just had a real upbeat attitude today in practice. He was super upbeat, lots of hard work, but smiles in the dressing room. He just had a really good attitude for a guy who was healthy scratched. And I think that's one of the reasons why they love him. And I think he's a leader, and I think that's the tone they're going to want as they kick off the playoffs. So they'll rest him a little, but I think he'll be in there.
And Slepyshev, you weren't really enamored with his game last night.
No, I wasn't. I really wasn't. I thought he struggled mightily on the boards in his own end. And, I mean, it's one thing to have a tough handler too, but every time he got the puck on the wall, he either wasn't in the right position or failed to make a play with it. And as a fourth line bubble player, and maybe I have a hard spot for this because there was nothing I got more crap for more often than not making good plays on the wall in my own end as a fourth line grinder on a team I probably shouldn't have been on. I got killed for that all the time. So I noticed stuff like that. When you're a bubble player and your coach can't trust you to 8 times out of 10 make a good play on the wall in your own end, you just totally decrease your usability. And Slepyshev had a really hard night last night on the wall in his own end, making good plays, getting pucks out. I just don't feel like there's a reliability built into his game that's tailor-made for a coach trusting you in key moments in a playoff game. So to me, he's not – I mean, people want to say this guy's locked in, that guy's locked in. To me, he's a ways from being locked into a roster spot.
Yeah, that's fair. Shauger, tomorrow, big game, Sharks and the Oilers. Look forward to it.
Okay, sounds good, buddy. We'll see you at the rink.
It's Ryan Rashog from TSN.